As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm now joined by JJ Bull the Mallard.
Hello, Joe Devine.
How are you, Mallard boy?
I'm looking forward to a very fast 10-minute podcast episode
yeah,
today.
Yes. We haven't left ourselves very long. But also, we're joined by another man for whom height is no issue. It's Seb Stafford-Blaw. Hi, Seb.
Hello, Joe Devine. Height is no issue at all.
How are you doing out there in Germany?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you very much for asking.
Good. Well, today we're going to talk about a handful of things. Of course, we've been away. Do you remember when I said we'll be back in a week? It's been a long old week, a week containing about three or four other weeks. But as a result of that, we've missed loads of things that we could have talked about. Like, for example, Jack Grealish potentially moving to Manchester City. Today, as we record, Harry Kane, he hasn't gone to training. There's these things and there's other things that Seb has kindly put in a plan that I haven't read yet. So we'll be getting to those later on in today's episode. But for now, I will leave you in the warm hands and the oh-so-cool embrace of the Mallard. Now, Seb, where else to start but with the, oh, goodness me, the news, Harry Kane is skiving off work, apparently. I don't actually know what's happening. What's happening?
Oh, I don't want to talk about this. But yes, Harry Kane has not returned to Tottenham training. He was due to come back after his post-Euros break on Monday. And there is no sign of him. And at the moment, at the time we're recording, Tottenham have actually offered no comment. But pretty much every major media outlet in the UK is reporting that he is refusing to, wants to have a big old chat with Daniel Levy and hash out terms for him to leave. So yeah, big old muddle. It's kind of strange because it feels as if since the news that Harry Kane wanted to leave Tottenham broke, absolutely nothing has happened. And I mean nothing. No one has made a bid, no one has commented, there's been no significant movement in any direction, and then today it feels like he's gone from like stage one or two of transfer annoyance to stage 11, which is the kind of the go and strike, not turn up to work, burn all my bridges in one go sort of way.
Well, I mean, does it look like he's not going to get a move then? Because this is a fairly serious thing, isn't it? If the reports are to be believed, Seb, that he hasn't gone into training to try to force through a move. I guess the complication is also that there are other reports out there about City moving for Jack Grealish. Do they have the money to buy both players?
Well, two problems there. Like the first one, yeah, if you spend £100 million on Jack Grealish, even for Manchester City, you'd presume that would put a little bit of a dent in their budget. But the other problem is, if you're willing to pay £100 million for Jack Grealish, then that's probably something that Daniel Levy will use against you in a negotiation.
Yeah.
Jack Grealish is a wonderful player. I love watching him. But Harry Kane has more Premier League golden boots than Jack Grealish has Premier League seasons.
Sure.
So it's you think £100 million Jack Grealish, £150 million Harry Kane, probably even at 28, even with bad ankles.
Because he signed that six-year contract, didn't he? I mean, that's his real problem. He signed the six-year contract. How many years has he got left on that? Three?
He's got three more. So there's no real contract pressure at work. He hasn't really got the kind of... He can't use the threat of leaving for free next year, as you've seen with, like, remember what happened with Robin Van Persie?
Yeah.
It's not really one of those. And what I find strange is that in many ways, he is at the mercy of Daniel Levy's judgment, or at the mercy of Daniel Levy's whatever you want to term... the emotion which lets you lead, allow your star player to leave, whatever that quality is. I don't think Daniel Levy has a lot of it. And yet he seems to have spent, or not Harry Kane, Harry Kane's representative, he's represented by his brother. He seems to have spent the summer antagonizing Daniel Levy and creating a context which would probably annoy you if you were Levy. You're thinking, okay, well, you know, this isn't going to make me drop my asking price. It's not going to weaken my resolve to keep hold of you. It seems to say, unless there's something that is much too smart for me to understand going on, then I don't get what the end game is to this style of negotiation, really.
Well, JJ, here's a question for you then, right? If Manchester City don't buy Harry Kane, let's just say that the season continues as is, they don't really need a striker, do they? They did fine with that one last year.
They've got Gabriel Jesus. They also have Liam Delap, who is son of Rory.
Really?
In the reserves. Yeah, yeah. He's really highly thought of.
I didn't know that.
He'll be in the first team squad, apparently, but probably not starting a lot.
Can he throw the ball really far?
I don't think he can.
Do you think people ask him that all the time?
Yeah. It's not like in that old game. It's not Pokemon. It was another one called Monster Hunter, something like that.
Sure.
I can't remember what it was, but you could breed the two. If you had not a Pokemon, but two different monsters... And you could breed them to create new monsters with traits of each.
You could create Rory Delap, is that what you're saying?
Yes, Rory Delap could mate with another monster and create Liam Delap. So that's what they've done in this version of whatever that game was called. I can't remember.
Back anyways, to Liam tactics, Delap. Safety in tactics.
Yes. Liam Delap is more of an all-rounder. He's not like Gabriel Jesus, who's like a false nine, very nippy little man.
Gabriel Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It's sort of Portuguese.
He's Brazilian, isn't he?
Well, yeah. I guess, yes, that makes sense. Jesus.
Sure.
Thank you for correcting me, Joe.
No, no problem. I'll do it loudly every time.
They would like to have another striker. It's the whole point. They're trying to get Harry Kane. They're trying to... What they often lack is being able to not mix it up and go to plan B, as people will say, but you want to have a focal point of your attack who scores lots of goals.
Yeah.
And while Jesus will score a lot of goals for you, he's not going to be someone who can attack high balls. He's not someone who can annoy defenders by being a physical presence and threat. That's what they hope.
He doesn't necessarily broaden their options.
No. And I mean, Pep worked with Lewandowski at Bayern Munich. I'd imagine that's... I mean, he did bring in Zlatan Ibrahimovic at Barcelona once, so he clearly has an idea in his mind of having this kind of big, tall, physical striker.
Yeah.
Kane is just... guaranteed 20 to 25 goals a season and often scores above his XG, and that's kind of what Man City would like to do because they're always on their XG. So if you have someone that gives you the extra little XG factor,
the X factor in the G,
yeah, then that might be what gets them over the line in Champions League and helps them. Liverpool won the league, Man City didn't lose the league. Liverpool won the league, they were way over their XG by miles. They were just overscoring and City were right level, even though City kind of... So City technically should have been the better team, but they weren't because Liverpool underperformed.
Yeah.
And so, Kane would be their target because of what he's going to bring to them. But yeah, like you said, Kane's completely goosed himself.
He must be tired though as well, right? I mean, Seb, I don't know if this is fair or not, but as a sort of ordinary viewer, I look at Kane playing football and I see Wayne Rooney. I see someone who by the time he gets to 31 is going to be too tired to be as good as he is now. Is that unfair?
No, I think it's partly to do with his body shape. So when Kane is either highly fatigued or coming back from injury, he has a habit of lumbering. He's a bit lumbery. He's not a fluid mover at the best
he
of
hunches.
Times. He does a bit. And because he's big and quite bulky and muscular, it looks like you watch him run, you think, God, you wouldn't want to be his knees or his ankles, his hips or anything.
Getting a pounding.
But I wonder whether... This has come up. this has come up three or four times. Like Kane has had a little bit of not a goal scoring slump, but a slump in performance and a slump in fluidity. It's not helpful just to see a massive version of JJ's face laughing. It's harder than in the studio. And every time he reaches this point, he rebounds and starts scoring again. And people start saying things like, actually, he's playing the best football of his career now. And look, he's added a new thing into his game. And then people who've said things like, oh, his performances aren't very good anymore. Or there's a very famous comment on Twitter where somebody dug out one of those data radars during one of Kane's slumps and said something like, oh, this is just a really bang average sort of championship standard player now. And that was, I don't know, 6 months before he scored another 25 Premier League goals in a season or something.
Sure. So, he's a tough one to analyse in that sense, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's his thing is making people look silly with their predictions. So maybe we won't add ourselves to that pile. But I do think that there is... I am actually going to add myself to that pile now. He looks 28 now, like as a footballer. He looks like someone who's... still in his prime, but it's probably, he looks like he might be on the back end of it. I don't know. It's the number of ankle injuries, the amount of football he's had to play. And he has this habit of, particularly during the Pochettino era, of he played an awful lot of games where he didn't have to be on the pitch. Yeah. And that's always been a kind of background concern for Tottenham fans. So I don't know. I'm wary of what he's done before. It's just that we've reached a fork in the road. And actually the urgency with which Kane is pressing the situation suggests that he now feels time is of the essence. And I understand that. I understand his frustrations with Spurs. It's nothing that we all haven't felt as Spurs fans. But it's a really bold move. And it's such a sad thing, though, isn't it? Because he's done so many good things in a Tottenham shirt. And no matter what happens from this point on, today, Monday, and the decision not to turn up in training, this is part of his, not legacy, but it's part of his Tottenham CV forever. You can't take something like that back, which is, it is a real shame. Interesting, JJ. Okay, so Joe's walked out on us, but to be clear,
Joe has literally walked out of the studio.
The thing about Joe, though, is that Joe really, really, really likes professionalism. And anything, even if it's not really related to him or his interests, if something isn't professional, it antagonizes him to an almost, he finds it intolerable. So I think what we've just seen there is that, basically.
I think he told me he got that professionalism from his favorite MP, Tom Watson, who always follows for business advice, particularly.
Interesting. Okay, so I was having a conversation with someone on social media earlier, and we were talking about valuation and the £100 million bid for Jack Grealish, or supposed £100 million bid for Jack Grealish. Mm. And I felt confident in saying, right, if Grealish is worth that amount of money, if you're Tottenham, you would be asking for somewhere in the sort of the 150, 175 region. And someone bit back a little bit and said, well, Grealish is younger, he doesn't have the same injury record. Mm-hmm. He has a bit of an injury record. And he was like, this is sort of, it doesn't make sense. Why is there such a disparity in their value? But then am I enslaved to the kind of the old way of thinking, which is that goals are the game's currency. Someone that with an established record is worth more. And despite his age, if you have that proven track record, it's worth more than the theory of what somebody may be. Because you could say, right, well, Jack Grealish is 25. He's got the best year of his career ahead of him. But then in theory, he does. We don't know, for instance, that he's not one of those players who needs to be the center of something, who needs to occupy that sort of talisman role. What would you put a value? What value would you put on Kane?
I think actual value, probably like 90 to 100. But that doesn't mean anything because it's what he's worth to both parties.
Yeah.
And Levy's not going to let him go because he's figured out he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to at all. He's got 3 years in his deal. And much like in Football Manager, when you've got players who PSG are trying to poach, unless they've got a minimum fee release clause, you don't have to sell them. You just don't. So you can keep him for as long as you want. He won't sign a new contract, whatever. It's not going to happen. And then you get 2 more years out of him. Then you sell him and get some money. And then even an unhappy Kane, I mean, he's not turned up for training, right? But he's not going to not turn up for games, and he's not going to not play as well and trying to score all of the goals that he can.
Which wouldn't be in his interest if you wanted to...
Well, no, of course not.
If you wanted to pursue this kind of direction next summer... He will be either 29 or soon to be 29. You need to have a very good season behind you to convince people that you're worth the money then. Also, like, I don't know whether I'm biased or whether I'm incapable of looking at this objectively, but why is the issue here? Like, if Manchester City want you, you're a footballer. Manchester City want you.
Thanks.
Yeah, a good one, you know, a really, you know, strong sort of 7.5 out of 10 kind of player. Anyway, you're a footballer and Manchester City want you. If they're not willing to match the asking price, then isn't your frustration directed at them? Because
a City, no, definitely not. I wouldn't have thought so.
But if you're, I mean, if you were, like you say about the, with the sort of the PSG example, if you're Daniel Levy and you're negotiating with Manchester City, you're not handing out any discounts because the finances are there, or you believe that they are, regardless of what Pep Guardiola says in public. So why would you, if we're led to believe at the moment that City haven't made anything close to a kind of a, an acceptable bid, so why would you sort of, why would your frustration be with Tottenham if there's kind of a stated asking price which the club with an almost inexhaustible pile of money won't match? It's a, I don't know, I don't know whether that's, I've got too much of a, too heavy a Spurs hat on.
I mean, I think it is a heavy hat, to be fair. I mean, FFP still exists in some form, doesn't, does it not? Like, so, Man City might not have endless amounts of money, but they still have to work within some sort of realm of realisticness.
I suppose they do, but whilst the, I mean, the grace period isn't unending, but whilst we're still yet to see kind of how breaches of FFP would be dealt with within the COVID period, which is 2 years now instead of just one. So I suppose, like, yes, there must still be constraints on what you can spend, but they're not quite as well defined as they used to be. So if you want to spend money in big, big doses, now's the time to do it. I think it would probably be the philosophy for a PSG or a Chelsea as per last summer, or Manchester City.
And the thing is, right, I mean, this sounds daft, but if City were to sign like a 70 and an 80 and a 50 and a £60 million player, it'd be, I can't do the maths on this very quickly, but it'd be the same amount of money they were going to spend on just a Grealish and Kane.
Yeah.
Overall, it just sounds a bit nuts because it's all in one, all the eggs are in one transfer basket.
It's also, I think it changes the conversation about City a little bit, because there was, it's been quoted quite a lot over the last few days, but there's been, there was that Guardiola comment where he talked about, well, we don't just go out and buy £100 million, £100 million players, which is a little bit of a dig at Man United, I guess. But also, like, if you look at the patterns of their spending, they're quite careful not to go beyond a certain level. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll go up to about sort of 60, but the idea of them, they don't spend at PSG levels, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Now, as soon as, if you spend, even if you just do the Grealish deal, I think it changes a little bit, because football world is very, very strange, and, you know, even the traditional powerhouses don't have any money. And then without really selling anybody, Man City go out and spend potentially £250 million. It's a change in the nature of the conversation. It's like that you bracket yourself as a very particular type of club in the transfer market, I think.
I just don't think this is going to happen. I don't think they'll be able to buy him.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Let's talk about something more interesting. Let's talk about Aberdeen.
Oh, yes. Let's do that.
So, Conference League. Aberdeen are in the Conference League, and who have they drawn?
Well, it's not Spurs, which I'm very thankful for as a supporter of Aberdeen Football Club. They've been drawn against Limassol or Karabag.
By UEFA Conference League standards, the league that hasn't actually begun yet, that's quite tough. Karabag are a nasty team to play away from home.
Yeah, Aberdeen tend, there's something about it. I don't know if it's just the, I'm sure a lot of clubs have pessimistic fans, but it's just, I mean, 1 year we got into Europa League very well. The first team we got was Burnley, which, I mean, might not sound like a terrible draw, but when you consider this, the budgets, the difference between the two clubs, it's enormous. Like, Burnley will sign players for 10 and 11 million players at a time, and that'll be Aberdeen's budget for about five seasons. Yeah, you want to avoid those just so you can get in, because the money you get when you get into a group stage, even at Conference League level, could be club-changing.
What's Aberdeen's record by? Who is Aberdeen's record by even?
The record buy for Aberdeen Football Club is Paul Bernard in, I think, the 1997 season for, do you want to guess what the total of the purchase was?
£875,000.
It was £1 million. And that really? Is what we're dealing with. Yeah, that's so they've come nowhere close to that ever since. And the club's changed a lot since then. But there's the thing, so like Karabag could be a difficult... they're quite far away, as I recall, Karabag.
Yeah, it's in Azerbaijan. Yeah.
Yeah. There was, it might be that team was another one Aberdeen played in a Europa League qualifier where it was closer to China than Aberdeen is to Middlesbrough, something like that. But then you can, I mean, the travel isn't the enemy, but the...
It's a little bit the enemy.
I mean, it's not ideal. I mean, both teams have to travel, I suppose.
Yeah,
but yeah, that was a good thing. I was really worried they were going to get Spurs because it seemed like the inevitable thing that would happen. Limassol are ranked 205th, apparently, in UEFA club rankings. Karabag are 69th. Aberdeen are in the middle at 151.
What else has... So I haven't seen you since the night of the European Championship final. And was at about 1 a.m. where, like, London was like a sort of a scene from... like a Mad Max film. What has excited you about football since?
Watching Aberdeen play, genuinely. Yeah. It's all changed. So for watching a club you support suddenly be entertaining to watch, which is feels new, and capable of winning games by a scoreline of more than 1-0, that's been really fun. I enjoy the whole transfer saga thing, and I also like watching teams build towards a season.
Yeah.
So that, find that I'm trying to think what else.
I quite like it when it's about like late July and a team have put together like a chain of two or three really good signings and you think, and you're invariably proved wrong, but you think, oh, that's going to be really interesting. And that's like, so Leicester City. So one of the things on our podcast plan is the Community Shield, which is coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. And Leicester City, one of the signings is Ryan Bertrand, good player. But I think the two that have really caught the eye and captured the imagination are Samari and Daka. They are this year's club where everyone, every other club of a certain level uses their activity to flog their own chairman or sporting director. Mm-hmm. You know, you see sort of, oh, Daka being snagged and Samari being, I think they got him for less than £20 million or something from Lille. And everybody else sort of starts abusing social media executives on Twitter. They feel like that. And it's kind of, you're too far away from the season to be kind of cynical or to be sort of too focused on your own team. So you have a kind of reflective, even-tempered perspective on the year. It's kind of fun.
Well, that also chimes with my actual other favourite thing about football in the off-season is when Football Manager Wonder Kids are signed by clubs, you know, so you get to see them play and you get to see who they are.
Give me an example.
Well, Daka is one.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, this kind of player that, I mean, not even Football Manager, just a player you've known about, well, that I've known about, certainly, for a few seasons now, played in Austria, where he's been, in fact, we've just done a video for it in Tifo IRL, on Daka and what he brings. So he's 27 goals in 28 games last season at Salzburg. He basically stepped up to replace Haaland when he went to Dortmund and has done that exceptionally well. He's, Leicester signed him as like a, again, more detail on this in the video, but they signed him as a replacement almost for Jamie Vardy. So he won't be in the team straight away. Rodgers has said he's going to be a bit of a development year for him. But he's very similar in style to how Vardy plays. A few touches per game, plays off the last man, times his run so he's at full speed by the time the ball arrives at him rather than being having to run beyond from a starting position level with the defender, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Bit of a poacher. And they were looking at Odson Edouard at Celtic, which is a very different player, but similar to, I suppose, in style more to Iheanacho, in that he's more of a 9.5, between a 10 and a 9. Takes more touches, more likely to link with play. And so that's quite fun. Boubacar Samari is meant to be like a Tielemans almost addition. There's a good chance that Tielemans, I'd imagine, will go to, what's the step up from Leicester? Probably someone like Liverpool would be the thing, but they need cover for that sort of player. They don't really have that box to box that they've got in the team just now. They've got Dennis Pratt. Basically a 10. Choudhury might be going away on loan. He's basically a DMC. They've not got, I'm definitely missing a player or two from that midfield they can play in there. Yeah, that's kind of one of the fun bits. But you'll see it with Leicester is that they did so well last season, so how do you improve on it? The only way you can do it is by signing really good players that are better than ones you've got. Now, the ones they've got that are really good, they signed young as wonder kids and let them develop for a year or two. Tielemans is a good example. Captain at Anderlecht, when he was really young, came through and was already basically a Champions League level player, and that's exactly what he is now. But you sign him younger, you pay a lot of money, but not as much as you do when they're at their prime. Harry Kane, if you sign him when he's 21, he's going to be a lot cheaper than he is at 28. So that's the model they've got to follow. They can't afford to spend £70-80 million a player. So you spend 30 or 25 on a player, you're hoping you become that £70 million player later on. And that's really interesting.
You know what I like about Leicester, actually, is that they've kind of fireproofed themselves for future exits. So you talked about Tielemans, and it wouldn't be a surprise if in a year or two he moved to a Champions League contending club. At the same time, though, they seem to have spent, and Daka's probably a good example, because as you say, they're not going to depend on him immediately. So what you've got is these players from lots of different positions who are being integrated, developing little relationships with teammates. And then as and when a couple of these players get sold, if they are, they can just step in. And then you're not, for instance, if Leicester sold a Wilfred Ndidi this summer, and you thought, right, we're going to sell him first, and now we've got our 60, 70, 80 million pounds from Manchester United, now we need to go out and buy a replacement. If you go to Lille and try and buy Samari after that has happened, and after the whole world knows that you've got 80 million quid burning a hole in your back pocket, all of a sudden, the negotiations a lot harder. I've seen that so many times in football. But also, you're asking a player to come into a new league, new town, new group, and then immediately step into the shoes of one of the best central midfielders in the league. And I suppose the same is true of, you know, if Vardy had left this summer, or if they'd left the kind of the Vardy succession plan a couple of years later, longer. But in Leicester, you've got, I remember at the beginning of the transfer window, I don't think this is going to happen now, but it seemed as if people were convinced that James Maddison was going to leave, that he might go and play for Arsenal. Mm-hmm. You thought, well, yeah, you don't want to lose him, but you could probably take £60 million. You wouldn't necessarily have to replace him. You'd want to, but it wouldn't be an absolute necessity. You have, I know it's slightly different players, but you've got Tielemans in that midfield. You've got Harvey Barnes playing out wide. You've got Dennis Pratt in there as well. You can construct something new out of those parts, even if it doesn't look quite the same. And so Leicester seems to be working from an even keel. It's not too reactionary. Like one of my great fears with the Kane situation and Tottenham hat back on is that I've had it a few times. People say, "Oh yeah, and 150 million quid is a good deal, and you could buy three or four players." And you can't though, because first of all, you're left with not enough time to do that. Second, you know that every club on the continent can smell your desperation a mile away. So if you go and, for instance, if you sold Harry Kane tomorrow and you wanted to sign Dusan Vlahovic from Fiorentina, well, all of a sudden, the sort of the reported 50 million euros that they want for him becomes 75, and you expose yourselves to all these inefficiencies. Leicester don't do that, and I really, really like it.
It's also part of one of the things that Rodgers does very well is coach players.
Yeah.
And I mean, people like watching them play. That's not very easy to do. It takes time to put those things in place with various sessions that you build to make your team play a certain way. And by bringing them in early, it means you can then sort of drop players in and out because they are... there's a cohesion to your team, and there's an understanding. You see it with Liverpool a lot when they sign new players. They don't play straight away because they need to learn the way the team plays before they can go in, because they won't be able to function as the way they should until they know how the team functions. And so again, that's quite clever transfer strategy to get them in where they are integrated into the team, not just the squad, the team, before they're just thrown in and expected to work out all on their own in a few sessions like that.
It's funny, actually, this is a good time to do this. Let's take an abrupt right turn from well-organized stuff to dysfunction, because I want to know a little bit about Celtic, because whenever I'm on social media and Celtic are playing, I'm invariably surrounded by really, 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 really angry Celtic fans. Why? Beyond just that they've been eliminated from the Champions League, what has happened that's so very bad at Celtic?
Oh man, it's just all gone wrong. So there's lots of complicated stuff behind the scenes that I can't even begin to go into because there's so many different names involved and everything. But essentially what's happened is Rangers got really good last season, went unbeaten in the league. Celtic were supposed to have 10 in a row and they just melted. It just melted apart. They have signed not terrible players, but the recruitment's been poor for ages. The new manager, Ange Postecoglou. Postecoglou, yeah. Thank you. Has repeatedly already made various, I think it's even just like, he's just having a go at the board for not signing players. Because it seems they're very dysfunctional. Doesn't seem to be anyone in charge really of bringing in players in particular at the moment. And I'm sure Celtic fans will be very quick to correct me on that. But what they brought in this season, let's have a look at their their squad. They brought in a defender, Carl Starfelt, a Swedish boy. He comes in as a central defender. And that's just one signing they needed, because they just got papped out of the Champions League by FC Midtjylland, right, who are a decent team as it is. Celtic should be able to put... It's an error they made that let in the goal in the first leg that gave them a real disadvantage. And that was a goalkeeper, Vasilis Barkas, who they signed last season for a bit of money.
Is that the goal which just whipped across him and he looked like he was leaving it and it went in off the back post?
It takes a few watches to work out what's going on, yeah. It's a free kick from left to right, and it just fires across the box and goes in the top corner. And it's very odd he's not saved it, but Barkas is signed to be the next proper goalkeeper for Celtic, and he's clearly not good enough. Maybe he'll improve in time. Not good enough now. 5 million, I think it cost. That's a lot. And they've got backup option is Scott Bain, who also isn't quite good enough. Definitely not for Champions League level. So they got the goalkeeper is not there. Then the back four or five they played in the Champions League was Anthony Ralston, who is basically a reserve right back. Then they have Stephen Welsh, very young centre back, who I think has done very well, especially towards the end of last season when he came in. Then they've got this young boy who I didn't even know about until he played this season, another centre back, I've forgotten his name completely, who started. Then the left back is Greg Taylor, who's a very mediocre, like a good level Scottish Premiership player, but again, not the Celtic left back. But now the rumours are linking them with the goalkeeper and Joe Hart, just because he used to be a name a few years ago. This is the thing, there's no real... Like, they used to sign decent players based on scouting, and Lee Congerton was a guy who was out with Brendan Rodgers when he was there at Celtic, and Rodgers inherited a much better team than Postecoglou has inherited. And Congerton's gone as well. So instead of buying players like Christopher Ayer, who's just gone to Brentford, or Van Dijk, or Osn Edward, and Dembele when he was there, now they're signing players who, not that are fit for purpose, I'm sure they'll come good, but they're not good enough right now at all. And so they're in a real mess. Rangers have completely overtaken them, and they're in danger of... They don't need a full squad rebuild, but they're in danger of being really left behind at the moment. It's not great at all.
That Joe Hart story baffled me, because I remember when he turned up at Spurs. Actually, I've done this a few times with Hart. When he went to West Ham, when he was at Torino, when he went to Burnley, I thought actually that might do him good. You know, I thought it was whatever was going on with him was like a temporary situation which he would just click out of. And it hasn't happened, and it hasn't happened now at four clubs. And if you watched him play at Spurs, he just... Whatever he had, and I don't like the idea that Joe Hart was never a good player, because he was.
Yeah.
He was a little bit overhyped because he was English, and his personality probably got in his own way a few times. I think that's probably fair. But all of that stuff, that's a very old take on Joe Hart. Now, I see a player looks incredibly vulnerable. He's lost his confidence. He probably has some merit around the club. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but other professional footballers seem to like him. They seem to like training with him, and he seems to be popular enough at Spurs. But if I'm Celtic, I'm thinking, right, he's probably coming with pretty hefty wages because he's still Joe Hart and he carries a reputation. Is the intention for him to be a first choice up there? Because that seems...
Well, but then that's really weird,
JJ, because if you're gonna spend money on a player, why are you not looking at your model at Celtic? Should surely be, you know, to win the league, of course, but your recruiting model should be, I want to be signing players under the age of 23. I want to be giving them a platform to play, and then I need to sell and flip them and use that money to kind of perpetuate my own cycle. Joe Hart doesn't fit into that. At all.
No. And when you start trying to chase something quickly rather than doing it to a strategy or with any sort of planning, it looks very haphazard. It's kind of all over the place. Maybe Hart would be good there at Celtic. He'd bring a certain level of professionalism. That's one of the things they needed as well, is that Scott Brown has left. He's been their I mean, the cliche, he's their talisman, but he has been the heart of that Celtic team, and he has instantly transformed the way Aberdeen look. They look comfortable in possession. They look like strong to the tackle. They look like they're not going to just fold apart like wet origami if you put any pressure on them. And I think missing that now from the dressing room, so the captain now stepping up will be Callum McGregor, who is more of a technical leader than I think a strong, shouty man. Not that you need that as a leader.
But that's kind of what Scott Brown was, in my eyes at least. That's what I thought of when I watched Scott Brown play.
I mean, Scott Brown, like, will fire into it. Like, when Scott Brown celebrates when he gets tackled, when he gets fouled and he gets up and he's not injured, he gets up and he cheers and, like, you know, pumps his chest out to folk. And the crowd gets really up, and then that just carries on. It's this symbiotic thing with the crowd and the players, yeah, and they all come together like that. So they're missing that now. But then what Celtic need to sign is they need leaders. They need technical players. Austin Edwards, a very good player. And this is another problem they've got, is that Edwards, along that model, is that they'd hoped he'd be worth 40 million just now, mm-hmm, and he probably is, but his contract runs out next season and no one's in to buy him. So Leicester came in with a bid apparently like a while ago, but then never followed it up, so they've not got Edward. They don't care because they've got Patson Daka that we're talking about earlier. So now Celtic don't have that big cash influx which they relied upon. They don't have the Champions League money that they need to be able to buy these players they want to bring in, and so a lot of it is, you got to be very calculated with how they're doing it. Rangers scouting has been excellent. The players that Gerrard's bought in with whatever scouting network he set up there has made them technically very good, but also they've brought leaders who are able to turn that team into one that could go the entire league season unbeaten. Where Celtic are now chasing, and they had all the power, they had all the confidence, like all the psychological power was theirs, and it's all gone. And now it looks like the behind the scenes is what you see on the pitch. It's a bit of a stramash. There's no real cohesion in anything. There's no clear planning, and I mean,
the worrying thing for me is that the sort of the angry Celtic fans that I was talking about earlier, like, it's not even that the kind of, when they went out to Midland in the Champions League, people weren't really raging against the manager. It was kind of people kind of prefacing everything they said with sort of, right, well, I don't really blame Ange Postecoglou. This is a board issue, and that's like when that speaks to a really rotten type of dysfunction. That's kind of worrying moments in a football club when football fans are just in manager out, drop this player, need another, you know, 300 million spent, you know, that kind of stuff. That's kind of okay, because that's just day-to-day football fandom, really, for a lot of people, I think, now. But when you've lost faith in people behind the scenes to make decisions which impact the things you see on the pitch, that's a different kind of chaos.
Yeah, it's definitely the board that all the fans are annoyed at, because they've seen it coming, they've seen it slowly happening. They weren't very happy last season when Neil Lennon, who left, you know, maybe through the season. Then there's another thing that's to do with the planning. Neil Lennon left, or was released, or I can't remember what the actual story was. Basically, he's not there, you know, he just went. And up stepped John Kennedy, the assistant manager. And that was a while ago in last season. And it took until quite recently for them to bring in the new manager. So if you're going to get rid of Lennon, you think they have someone lined up, but either it's failed attempts to hire someone new to take them in, or no agreement on what kind of manager they want to take them to the next level. And if they were going to bring in that manager, they should bring him in earlier, so he's got a chance to work with scouts and the recruitment department to try and bring in exactly what you need. And it straight away, it already looks like, I mean, they lost the first game of the season. They lost 2-1 to Hearts, and were not good by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know, it's interesting, at least, for a neutral.
All right, let's use that to talk about more dysfunction and also to plug The Athletic, because one of my favourite things to read recently was Stu James's account of what's been going on at Swindon Town. Now, with some of these articles, which sort of chart the downfall of football clubs, you can kind of glaze over, because a lot of the stuff that you read, you've heard before. Like, there's sort of cliches of bad ownership and disaffected players and angry fans. This is on a completely different level. It's one of those where you can read certain paragraphs and sometimes you just have to read them again just so that you're absolutely sure you've understood what's happened. But just because it is a little bit like what might happen if a group of children tried to run a football club. It's breathtaking. So do go and read that. JJ, what's caught your eye on The Athletic lately?
Loads. In researching my video we've done on Tifo IRL of Patson Daka, I've read lots of stuff on Patson Daka on the website. Often just by searching his name and it all comes up. In fact, I learned about a load of different footballers that you just type their names in and then you get all sorts of bits and pieces. And now I'm on the spot. I can't remember all of the things I've read, but I do read it every day. And
every single day. Hey, Danny Taylor's interview with the Silver Twins was very, very interesting. It's interesting how you form an opinion of players based on, well, pretty much nothing. And I always saw them as, when they're during their time at Man United, when they were together, they just seemed like quite meek, unassuming characters. Turns out they're absolute shithouses, but in a good kind of supporter pleasing sort of way. And no, they were very, very talkative. It's a great interview. So do go and give that a try on The Athletic. And if you want a deal for that, I dare say there's one going at the moment, but if you go to theathletic.com/tifo, I think at the moment you can get a free 30-day trial.
It'll I believe that is correct.
That is correct. That is good. Okay, so go and do that. Joe, that would make Joe happy. Also, the happier Joe is, the less likely he is just to flounce out in the middle of a podcast. And that just that works for everybody. It that benefits everyone. So if you go and subscribe, go and take advantage of a deal. Happy Joe, happy podcast, happy JJ, happy me. You know, and we can be sure that the podcast going forward will have a third voice, which would be nice, which would be really nice.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
JJ, I think, should we talk about Pro Evolution Soccer a little bit, or should we save that for another time?
I've not played a new one yet, so we could. No, I think we should talk about it. I think it's interesting.
Now, there's a lot of terms. So they announced last week that it's becoming a free-to-play game. It's going to be sort of online-focused, cross-platform, and all sorts of alarm bells rang in my head because I feel as an older user of Pro Evo, I need a safe space. I need somewhere away from teenage people that are going to humiliate me online. As we found out in the kind of in the Warzone conversation that you and I had a couple of days ago about the helicopter and the death and all that stuff. I don't want Pro Evo to become like that. What is new Pro Evo going to look like, or eFootball as I'm obliged to call it now?
So, like, for context for anyone who's not entirely sure, this is Pro Evolution Soccer, also known as PES, formerly known as International Superstar Soccer. And I think in, like, South Korea or Japan, it was called, like,
Winning
J
11.
League or something? Winning 11, that's Winning what it was, 11. Winning 11, yeah, that's the one. So that's what it is. So they've announced that they're not going to make any new PES, editions of PES. Last one was 2021. It's a good game by all accounts, although you have to play in a counter-attack or you can't win, and that sucks. However, now it's going to be, cross-platform. So similar to how, a lot of games now, this is the thing, you had Google Stadia come out and the idea was that you'd be able to, actually, I don't even know what that is. I'm going to just move past that because I don't know what that was.
I only pretend to know what that is.
I'm not going to pretend. So like, our good old friend Warzone is cross-platform. It means you can play it if you have a PlayStation with your friend who's on Xbox, with your friend who's on PC. You can play it all together. And one of the things that's interesting about football games now is that a lot of people play them not just 1v1 and two teams, they play them so it's 2v2 or 3v3. So in those kind of modes, and there's a good one in Pro Evo called co-op mode. And I think that this is, you cannot compete really with FIFA because the amount of money they have behind it is very much like the Man City of the football video game world, whereas PES became the, the one everyone likes, but is probably the better one to play. But
I derive no enjoyment from FIFA at all. I've tried. I just, every game is the same.
Well, what club is Pro Evo if FIFA is Man City? It is.
It's probably a Borussia Dortmund.
Leeds.
Leeds
in the Championship. That's what it is.
Yeah, okay.
Leeds in the Championship versus Man City now. So it's too different. They can still compete, but they're not gonna. So yeah, that's the thing now. So now it's cross-platform. And I mean, that'll be a good thing. It'll mean the graphics look probably a bit weird, but they'll scale up on devices that can handle it.
But JJ, it's a cross-platform on, for instance, I can play Warzone against Henry, who's on his Xbox, and that's fine. But if I'm playing Pro Evo against you and you're on your phone, how can that not be rubbish? How can that not be really, really bad?
Because I think you have to remember that we are both in our 30s and we are used to playing with a controller. But a generation of children have come through, and they are the future. Children are the future, Seb, and they play on their phones.
I accept that. Children are definitely the future. I accept that. But
not the ones who are going to become murderers, though, not them.
No, not those ones. No, we don't want those ones in Pro Evo. Definitely don't want to be playing against them online. But also, a phone has fewer buttons. So, for instance, if I wanted to super cancel, mm-hmm. you know, where I'm at a corner, so I want to escape my marker at a corner or just some kind of set piece, and I had to do that on the PlayStation with the PlayStation controller, how can I possibly do that on the phone?
Well, I mean, you can. There are paddles you can get for your phone that turn it into controller. That's basically the same sort of thing. But yes, I understand. And also, the movement of it is not ideal. I don't mean even playing Sonic is hard on a phone. It's just there's not a D-pad. You need that the physical feel. And that's the games used to be built because there's a physical feel to the games. You really feel it when you're playing it. I guess that's me being a bit romantic with it. I don't know if it'll work, man. But it's something new. It might be really great, and I'm going to assume it could work very well. The weird thing I think is that a lot of people still play things like Master League, whereas this is going to be clearly based, I'd imagine, towards playing
I really like Master League.
And okay. Just online divisions and things like that, because that's what I'd assume that's what most people play, because that's certainly what I play. But I know a lot of people still play Master League and normal leagues against the computer.
But this is a good thing, because Master League is a safe space. It's a place where you can convince yourself that you're adequate at the game whilst also remaining really, really bad at it in a way that gets brutally exposed anytime you go above like Division 7. For an older player, it's a barrier to entry. It's off-putting. It's kind of, all right, well, we'll go online and you can beat me 5-0 and, you know, it just turns into something I don't like. It feels like something's been taken away from me, and I'm not in the rational, you've moved through to the kind of rational, optimistic stage. I'm still, you know, in a sort of, I don't know why there's so many channels on television frame of mind about this. I'm not embracing the future at all. Like it was fine. It didn't need to change. It needed to get better. It didn't need an overhaul. It needed silly things being put right. Like when I go online, I need to be able to find someone to play against without just sitting there for 15 minutes.
But that's like, your player base, yeah. And then how do you compete with that, with the FIFA player base? You can.
Yeah.
The menus are also terrible. That's really important. One of the things I think is really important, especially talking about the future of it, is how in competitive gaming, esports is going to be a real thing. I mean, it already is a real thing. It is going to be, not exponentially perhaps, but progressively more and more of a real thing that people see, and there are elite sports people who play them. They are, you know, they're most of all, you think of them being mostly like hooded basement dwelling creatures who just play it, but they're not. A lot of these kids are some of them are actually very fit, and they actively make sure they are able to compete athletically. But it's the thing, if it's cross-platform, what happens I think tends to be is that you'll get PC players tend to be the ones who have all the benefit because they've got different refresh rates on your screen and stuff like that. Getting really
this
nerdy.
Is going beyond too nerdy, me pretty sorry. Quickly.
Yeah. I'm boring myself while I'm talking about it.
Okay, I think I'll sum that all up by just saying new stuff is bad.
Castolo
is good.
Stop innovating,
stop evolving, just keep things exactly as they are in a way that I can understand without having to put in any more effort. That's what I want from life. I feel like if Joe were here, he would be rolling his eyes at me and saying probably offensive things and probably undermining my confidence, chiseling away. But because he's not, we'll just say a nice goodbye. Goodbye, JJ.
Goodbye, Seb. It was lovely.
Goodbye, everybody.
To you
yeah,
Zoom.
It's been fun. I
camera watching me. We didn't.
Yeah, but it's I miss. You know, it's a theme. I miss the way things were. But we are back, and we are back to do. So we're going to do the podcast once a week this season. We will have an occasional special series here and there. More on that to come in the future. But you'll be catching us on Tuesday mornings, and we'll be recording on Monday. So we shall see you with Joe next week.
Yeah, I'll be less likely to leave during most of the shows from now on.
We'll have conversations about what his triggers are, what his pressure points are, and how not to kind of provoke the sort of the reaction we saw today. And we'll work at that. We'll see if we can get him to do 40 minutes next week, an hour the week after. It's, you know.
Getting him Matt Sharp.
Yeah, just work him into the new season gently. Thanks, everybody.